Okay. Hi, everyone. Ziva, compulsive overeater. I don't know why I'm nervous. I shared so many times, and for some reason, I'm a little nervous. Okay. Let me start by saying that I believe that our disease is a disease of self-hate. And it doesn't matter whether you starve yourself to death, which is a very hateful thing to our body, or whether you binge like I did, which is hateful to my body, or whether you are throwing up, which is hateful to your body. Now, in my case, I know when my self-hate was born. And I'm now in a different place, but I will just say my mother was extremely depressed. She never smiled. I never saw her smile growing up. And my father was very inappropriate. So when a 2-year-old doesn't have a mother who smiles, the 2-year-old and the 3-year-old doesn't have the capacity to have empathy and to say, oh, she doesn't smile because she lost her whole family in the Holocaust. When you're 2 and 3, if your mom doesn't smile to you, something is bad in you. You are bad because nobody is happy when you're around. So, fast forward, that was when I was 2. Now I'm 74. And I will just close the loop and say that even though my mom passed away, I have forgiven her. I have the most beautiful relationship with her internally. And even my higher power, who I believe is my higher self, is called Embracing Mother. And I communicate with her daily through the two-way prayer. So, having said that, so I grew up hating myself. And I think that at a very early age, I discovered that food makes you, fills the hole, makes me comfortable. Takes away the anxiety, and is just a great friend that is always there. And I'm grateful for the food because I think if I didn't have the food, I might have been now in an asylum. So I use the food very well. And I think that it was around my teen years that I crossed the line from using food in a way that really helped my mental health to abusing food in a way that was no longer kind to my body and to my soul. And between my teen years and where I'm now, it's 60 years, so I can't really go into details, but I will just say that I was never a restrictor. I was never a yo-yo dieter. My pattern was binging to the point of being sick and then recovering. Binging to the point of being sick and then a few days to recover. That was my pattern. And when I was 29, I came to OA in Israel. I had a 2-year-old child at that, a 1.5-year-old child at that point. And I joined the program and I met people that I related to. I felt really wonderful and safe and grateful in the meetings, but there was no recovery that happened to anyone there, nor to me. And a year later, we moved to America, which was now 40 some years ago. And when I came here, I started immediately going to meetings. And I was one of those for many years that would travel 40 miles to hear the best speaker, and then on the way home, I would binge to celebrate their recovery. That was my pattern. And I couldn't get abstinent. I just couldn't get abstinent. I did a very, very restrictive diet in OA called OA How, which might work beautifully for some people. For me, I lost a lot of weight. I was very, very, very thin. But I felt like I'm in a punitive, I was punishing myself all the time, and it didn't change my self-hate. And I basically, there was no recovery even then. And what I observed in all those years of working the program and living in Los Angeles, New York, Massachusetts, What I observed is that the people in the program who had what I want,
5 minutes, Eva.
thank you, and what I want changed from age 29 to later, but the people who had what I want were different gender, were different age, were different religion, were different many things. They only had one thing in common in this program. They were on a spiritual path. And I was not willing to be on a spiritual path at that point. There is no God, because if there was God, bad things wouldn't happen. And I just, every time you mentioned step three, I did this, like little kids, you know, when they don't want to hear you. And I just didn't, I years and years and years in program, I did the four step. I studied the big book, not like we study in this meeting. We used to read a whole chapter and then people would make some comments, not like we study it now, which is amazing. But anyway, so what was I saying? One second. My train of thought. I didn't sleep well last night, so my train of thought. Ah, yes. So I refused to work step three or to even search for a higher power. And then about 17 or 18 years ago, 17 years ago, I read a book that I won't mention because it's an outside, it's not a program literature, but the man had a little boy who died from cancer. And he said in the book, how can I resume my, he was a spiritual leader. How can I do what I do when this God, you know, when this thing happened to my child? And then he said, my only way of continuing to live is to believe that when bad things happen, God cries. And that changed everything for me. I suddenly understood that God didn't do the Holocaust. God is not doing what's happening now in the world in many places. God, if there is a God, he's sobbing right now. And my program led me to there were many ways in which I became willing to develop a relationship with a higher power. And there were many ways in which it happened. You know, at first it was the group. Then it was just the kindness in the world. Then it was the smile of a newborn baby, which I got to see several of them in the last 10 years. I have 5.5 grandkids. So I got to see a lot of smiling newborns. And that was like something that I felt is God. And then about when COVID started, I started going on Zoom to this two-way prayer meeting, which I no longer go, even though it's still every single day, because I found that going there and then reading what I wrote affected what I wrote. Because, you know, I was more self-seeking to impress you when I wrote in order to share. But now in the last 3 years, I'm doing it alone every day and I never share it with anyone. And God suddenly became embracing mother. And I write to her in Hebrew and she answers to me. And there is something so beautiful and intimate. She's always kind to me. She's always loving. And I reach out to that higher power on a daily basis. Like I exercise now, which I didn't do in my younger life. And I go, I do walk and I do different modalities and I go to a pool a few times a week. And many times I don't want to get out of bed. I want to stay in bed longer. And I hear this voice in me, like a mother, that says, I know you want to sleep, but we are going to go there together. And when we come back, you're going to feel so much better. Let's get together. And I get out of bed and go to the pool. And it's just, you know, it's just another way of being. Now, my food, let me say, so I was in and out of relapse for the first 28 years in the program. And if there are any newcomers here, please go to other meetings. I don't want to scare you. You're hearing one person's story, but that's my story. And when I started to developing a relationship with a higher power, That's when I suddenly got the ability to sit through discomfort. And that's the key to
10 minutes,
abstinence.
Siva.
Thank you. That's the key to abstinence. It's to sit through discomfort. And when I say discomfort, it's not just sadness, it's also joy. I was not comfortable with any feeling that was above a certain threshold. And anytime there was a feeling that was above it, I needed food to bring it down to the level that I could tolerate it. But as I developed the relationship with a higher power, I developed the ability to sit through discomfort. And that's when I became abstinent, which on December 22, if I stay abstinent for the next 2 months, it will be 17 years. Now, there are parts to my abstinence that are black and white. I didn't have any dessert in almost 17 years, and there is nothing around it. However, my food is very far from being perfect, number one. Number two, I don't count days, but I try to make my days count. And every abstinent meal that I have is like a loving amend to my body that was hated and abused for so many years. And I feel like my only regret, it's not, I don't regret anything. I don't regret the past. Where does it say in the big book? No wish to shut the door on it. I don't remember where it says it. I mean, I regret that I didn't get it earlier. But you know what? I got it in 2007, and I was then 57. So I'm enjoying those years in a different way. My food is most of the, I would say 87% of the time, my food is a food that if you knock on my door, I'll invite you in and you will want to join me. And 13% of the time, I will not open the door because I might be standing and eating on this by the sink and I wouldn't want you to see me. So that's where I am. It's imperfect, but I feel like recovery has to cultivate self-love and forgiveness. We can't hate ourselves. There is no recovery in self-hate. And you know, I sponsor, and it's interesting, I sponsor now a woman in Sweden, people in the East Coast, and one person in LA. And I sponsor this woman in Europe that called me one day a year ago, and she said, "Ziva, I don't know what she described. She ate something huge for her, so I need to count days starting tomorrow." And I said, "No, I'm not going to co-sign with your disease. Your disease wants you to start counting so that now you can go out and eat all the things you didn't eat in 6 months. And then on Monday, maybe we'll talk." So we are not counting days. Right now, you are going to tell me what is your next meal because it happened to her on the way from work at like 3. So she said, "I didn't plan." I said, "Okay, let's plan it right now. And you call me when you start eating dinner and call me when you finish. And let's revisit this incident in a few months. If you continue to eat bags of this thing every day, then of course you have a problem and you need help. But let's not call it counting days because I know what your disease wants me to now co-sign." And she's been abstinent since. So it's like, it's really about cultivating kindness and self-love. And I know for me, the people in the program that are all over the years, the people in the program that were very harsh and not kind are not my people. They're just not my people. They might work for somebody else, but not for me. And that's the beauty of this program that, number one, if you believe, or if I believe, that this program is really a program that can work for me, then I need to be willing to be on a spiritual path. That's number one. You know, I always tell the story that when before I became abstinent, my best friend was struggling with weight and I was struggling with weight. So she came with me to one OA meeting and I went with her to one Weight Watchers meeting. And when we left my meeting, she said, "Ziva, if I need to come back here, I'm shooting myself." And I went with her to Weight Watchers. And at the end of the meeting, they sold a box with seven little cupcakes. And they said, "At the end of each day, you treat yourself with one of those little cupcakes." And I dropped Kyle, her
Five
name. I
more
dropped.
minutes.
That's the last five.
Yes.
Okay. So I dropped her at home. And on the way home, I ate the seven cupcakes. So obviously, that program wasn't for me. My program wasn't for her. And we are both best friends and happy. She's still at a Weight Watchers, maintaining her goal weight, and I'm in OA, and it works for me. It works for me, and I love it. And the way I work it, I mean, I'll just give you an example of yesterday. Today didn't end yet, so I can't give you example of today. But yesterday, I woke up in the morning. I went to the pool. I exercised for 40 minutes. Then I came home and I did my two-way prayer because I felt really, really sad about news about somebody who was just diagnosed and sick. And I was just like heartbroken. So I came home and I was writing. Then I went to a meeting. I couldn't make this meeting, so I went to a later meeting. And then I babysat for my grandboys at my son's house. And when I came to the house, there was like the whole dining room table was covered with snacks. I don't know why they don't clean the snacks after whatever, but the whole dining room, and I just felt really, really triggered. And again, these were not desserts. If I would eat something, nothing bad would happen. But I knew that I don't need it and it's not good for me and it won't make me like myself. So I texted my sponsor right there and I said, I took a picture of the table so she sees what I see. And I said, "I'm leaving this area and going, the kids are sleeping and I'm going to another room. I have an amazing book and I'm going to read. And my only thing I can have is water." And my sponsor responded with two words, with three, "You are witnessed." That's all. She didn't say anything else, but that's all I needed because once I reached out to her, she was like holding that commitment with me. If I didn't reach out to her, and again, you know, some people say that they have complete food neutrality. They are no longer tempted. They don't need to eat, which is amazing. I don't have that. I don't have food neutral. I have neutrality with desserts. It doesn't even cross my mind. But with other foods, I don't. So when I'm in a good place, I can pray to my higher power in the privacy of my home. But when I'm in a shaky place, I need to reach out to you. I need another person to help me hold the commitment. And then I feel like I'm not alone. You are doing it with me, and I'm doing it with my sponsees. And that's like a chain of a beautiful community of recovery. Thank you for listening.